This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast, and we are coming to you after yet another grandiose victory. West Ham came to New Griffin Park, and once again, they couldn't get a win. They couldn't buy a win. They couldn't steal a win. They couldn't do anything with the win because they lost. 3-2 to the game, to the Bees. Great, great game as well it was. Very, very lively, New Griffin Park. We'll talk about that all a little bit later, but I'm Billy Grant and I'm sitting here in the virtual joint with my chums. I've got a glass of wine because I'm celebrating the West Ham victory, which is very nice. And I've got Laney in the house. Laney, how are you?
I'm good. I'm celebrating the third win on the trot with a glass of, I'll have some wine in a minute. I'm having a beer at the moment. But yes, it's this winning lot is, you can't tire of it. So yeah, three on the spin, mate. Who'd have thought that a few weeks ago, eh?
Three on the spin. We've got Sherlock Holmes in the house. Sherlock, how are you?
Very well, thank you. I'm not on the wine. I've got a fruity little IPA number. I'm also celebrating three wins on the spin. Three West Ham home wins on the spin as well. Bless them. They really thought they'd done it this time. They really thought they'd done it, but they just didn't have enough. So happy days.
Indeed, happiness all around. And we got Ali Mullally in the place. Ali, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. I'm toasting what was an incredibly boring game. God, we played such boring football on Saturday to grind out that result. But we got the result. It was awful brand of football we played on Saturday.
Good at what we do, though, are we? Apparently.
Yeah, very good. Good at what we do.
Yeah, Ali, to be fair, I saw you hopping around on Saturday. And just to explain, Ali's been in one of those motorised wheelchairs. We see, you know, she's one of those people that sort of knocks you over down the high street. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know,
little so
that's right. You know, sort of Benidorm and all that kind of malarkey, like, you know. So yeah, Ali's that. But all of a sudden, she's very happy because she got off her motorised scooter and she was hopping around with a walking stick.
Yeah, with my crutches. I was waving my crutches at you. I'm sort of like, I'm taking them to Liverpool, sort of like, so I can get first in the taxi queue from the pub. So yeah. Just, you know, beat everybody else out of the way.
Yeah, okay, that's the way forward, as they say. But anyway, so listen, we've got loads on the show today, actually. What have we got on the show today? We've got JP, you know, he's got his facts and his funk. Plenty of decent facts and funk there as well. We've also got, you know, we're going to listen to the fans after the West Ham game because they're very, very happy. Also, we've got the Gowler and the Bees breakdown crew as well, just giving us the lowdown on the West Ham game and looking forward to the Liverpool match. And also, I've got a little chat to with Neil from the Anfield Wrap, the very famous big podcast from Liverpool, Anfield Wrap. Neil's going to have a little chin wag with myself, and we're going to talk about the up-and-coming Liverpool game. But anyway, just coming back to things in the house, actually, because there's been lots going on. We thought, you know, we talk about Brentford a lot, but we just thought, let's just take a little bit of an eye. Let's take a little bit of a broader eye and look what's happening in the Premier League. And we are sort of quite a few games in the Premier League now as well. We're actually 10 games plus one in the Premier League. So we're actually 11 games in. And I don't know if you know, but there's a little stat that says basically, a close look at, there's a survey in 2019, it highlighted how the stable the league sort of stays after 10 match weeks. Okay. So researchers found that 77% of the statistical variance in the final league standings were explained by match week 10. So basically, in effect, the league almost kind of stays as it is after match week 10, and there's only like about 13% change, like just over 10% change in the league table. So in effect, you know, if you're 10th, you're going to sort of kind of stay in and around 10th. If you're sort of third, you're going to stay, you know, in and around that position. And if you're 15th or 16th or 17th, you're sort of kind of, you're sort of, you know, danger of slipping down into the relegation zone as it is. So in a way, that's actually very good news for the Bees, even though, you know, I know that we're safe and you know it's safe, but we can never rest on our laurels, can we, Lainey?
No, you can't. No, but it's good to know, you know, that you know, it's consistent across the whole of the season. And I know, you know, I famously say it's a 9-month season, so you can't sort of take exactly what's happening now. But it's good to know that from our perspective, it's unlikely to kind of unravel before our eyes. So what you see is normally what you get. I know there are going to be obviously, you know, exceptions to that rule, but it's unlikely. You know, we're not kind of wildly get, you know, the results we're getting aren't undeserved. It's not like we're winning every game and we just really don't deserve it. In fact, you could argue that we should have more. We should have won at Forest, and we should have won at home against either or both of Palace and Bournemouth. So, you know, Tottenham, Tottenham as well, and you could say we should have got a point at Man United. So
should have got 3 points at Man United.
Yeah, but even well, you should have done. Yeah, but even at the worst of taking a point, we could, you know, you're not going to get all of those going your way, but we could be 4 points better off, and in which case we're looking, you know, sixth or seventh in the league. So, you know, it's and that's, you know, with our injury crisis and without that striker that we won't mention. It's looking all right. You know, we deserve actually more than what we've got. So yeah, I'm happy with that stat, Bill. I thought 74% is our favourite percentage though. Still, yeah,
that's right, 74% indeed. I mean, listen, I mean, Ali, I mean, we're talking about this. You know, we're saying that the league table is. We're not saying the league table is what it is now. And I think people like Arsenal fans are going, oh no, but we're fourth. You know, and Man United fans are like, oh my God, we're eighth. Like, you know, we're sitting there in ninth, very very happy. Just looking at the teams around us, though, like, so Man United are one place above us on 18 points, you know, Brighton again on 18 points as well, you know, Chelsea are below us again, you know, this is getting like a bit of a, you know, it's just getting a bit repetitive, this, isn't it? Like, you know, Chelsea are below us on 15 points, you know, West Ham again below us on 14 points. Does that give you a flavour looking at how, you know, you've seen these teams play? You know, I mean, Aston Villa are in fifth place with 22 points as well, which leads you to say that, you know, Aston Villa could even be pushing for a European, you know, Champions League place this season, according to this sort of 77% stat. Ali, just looking at the games that you've seen, I mean, what are you saying about these teams around us and any games that just sort of kind of took your fancy recently?
Well, any games that, well, not really of games around us. I have to say it's the games. I was Newcastle. There's been a lot of bonkers over the weekend, isn't there? A lot of bonkers. Newcastle, Arsenal, bonkers. Arteta, bonkers. Spurs, Chelsea, very bonkers. I mean, I did say to a Spurs fan, you might know very well, you know that Chelsea are going to beat you on Monday night because it's Pochettino. But I don't think anybody saw the way that game was going to play out. It was absolute madness. And I think it, for all that Chelsea won 4-1, I think it showed up how poor they are going forward in that they had played against 9 men for half an hour and couldn't work out, for the love of God, how to beat how to score against 9 men. And I would say that Postecoglou took a calculated gamble playing that high line. Chelsea are so poor in front of goal, and they almost nicked it. You know, Son almost got an equaliser at 2-1, and then it would have been, you know, it's genius. So, you know, I think Chelsea are mid-table at best. I think Man United look, watched them again last night against Copenhagen, they look shambolic. I think that result at Old Trafford annoys me more and more every time I see them play.
For people out there, basically Man United scored 2 goals in time added on when we were 1-0 up as well, yeah. Which is, again, for people, God, don't ever wipe that from their memory cells. I just thought I'd just let you know.
Yeah, and understandably wiped it from their memory cells. But yeah, there's teams in and around us that, you know, in the normal way of things, you wouldn't expect to be in and around, as you would expect Chelsea and Man United to be further up the table than they are. I think Brighton is struggling a bit, and Newcastle are struggling a bit with having to play in Europe. I think that's affected both of them, so that brings them down towards the middle of the table a bit more. But I think they'll probably kick on a bit. I think, you know, we're quite happy jogging along in ninth. You know, I'm more than happy with that.
Yeah, and again, listen, this isn't set in stone at all, but, you know, at the moment now, they're sort of probably talking about anywhere between sort of ninth and 13th place, probably, for the Bees at the back end of the season, if we continue doing what we're doing at the moment now, which is probably not a bad place to be, considering how many injuries we've got. And Ellie, I mean, you can reel off how many. I mean, you just, again, listen, because some people may not know. We talk about, oh, we've got injuries, but I know, you know, some people coming up to us says, so what injuries have you got? So, Ellie, you just reel off the injuries that we do have.
No pressure on me to remember them all now.
Yeah, you remember
me, them. Mee's just come back, hasn't he? Mee is just about fit. So there's Gamsgaard, De Silva, Baptiste, Lewis Potter, Sharder, Flecken we're not sure about. Good, can't really count him, good. I suppose. Rico, who else?
And does Ivan Tony count as an injury?
Hickey. Yeah. Well, Tony counts as a suspension. Everybody's banging on after Monday night about... Romero and Udogie being suspended for Spurs. That's the three games. One's for one game, one's for three games. Like, Tony's out until 16th of January. So, you know, and I think it's just... I think at one point we could have fielded a whole 11 of injured players. So, yeah. You know, it's just... You know, and then you've got sort of like fringe players like Pert Harris, people like that, who's only just coming back. And it's bonkers, really. And you never hear anybody talk about how many injuries Brentford have got with our tiny squad. All we hear about is how many injuries Man United have got, how many injuries Chelsea have got with their massive squads. Chelsea have got about 502 players. And, oh, Chelsea have got so many injuries. It's all like, yeah, what about us? We've got about the same number of injuries, and our squad is like a tenth the size of theirs. Yeah. So, yeah, I think we've done amazingly well, considering all the injuries, missing suspensions we've had. I think we've done fantastically well.
That's right.
But I do, you know, you just think...
Didn't even mention
key injuries you don't want.
Yeah, you did mention Baptiste as well.
I did mention Baptiste.
Yes, you did. You've done very well.
Can we give her a little round of applause?
A round of applause here. There you go. Just reeling them
very
off.
Good. Saying, very good.
There you go.
Very good.
There you go, Ellie. Yeah. You know. So yeah, that's the Brentford injury list. Like I said, I think the Liverpool posse was actually asking me as well. You know, you keep saying you've got injuries, but who is exactly injured? I said Ali Mullally will explain it on the podcast as well.
We've
got Sherlock in the house there. So Sherlock, I mean, just going in and around us. I mean, obviously you feel you're very comfortable with our ninth position, but you know, just looking at the 77% stat, but and also just looking at games in and around. I mean, like, we've got European games today as well. We've got who went out? Yeah, yesterday. Who went? Who?
No, course, no, Man, one's, no, one's, no one's gone out. No one's gone out yet.
Well, Man United are sort of out-ish, aren't they? Man United
is nearly out.
Man United is struggling. Yeah.
Yeah. So Man United out-ish as well. But I'm just saying, just all these. So it's interesting to see these teams who, you know, even like I said, in Newcastle, we were in awe about, you know, how they kind of did last season. You know, they went from bottom of the league to Champions League pretty much in a very, very short space of time. But it just goes to show you how things may also level themselves out a little bit now. We're not quite in Newcastle zone yet, but we're not too far off it, are we?
I think, no, we and let's not forget that we were very close to getting something from Newcastle, dodgy penalty aside. We were very close to getting something there. So we're sort of, talk about being behind Brighton sort of by 3 or 4 years. And we are kind of, I'd say, if you want to expand that to being 3 or 4 years behind, maybe Newcastle, Villa, that sort of level of team. Not in terms of expenditure, not in terms of that. I realise that. Not even in terms of the top players we can attract. But in terms of staying in the league and solidifying and cementing it, you know, before this lovely run of three games that we had a lot of fans talking about how we were in a relegation battle. You could see the comments appearing on social media after games. We're in it now. And I mean, you look at Sheffield United, who got their first win, second win on the weekend, and they're still bottom. And Luton, with a draw against Liverpool, they're still only 1 point out of it, out of the relegation zone. So that's a battle. We've never even been anywhere near it. And I think we've been a lot closer to sort of the top half in terms of performances anyway. So I don't see why we can't aspire to be, again, not in terms of size or history, but in terms of competing, a team like Villa, I think we can compete with comfortably, and Brighton comfortably, and even with all of their filthy millions, perhaps Newcastle on our day. Yes.
Hey, can I just chuck a stat in here? If we'd have drawn at Newcastle, and we'd had beaten Forest, we'd be above Newcastle in the league now.
Yeah.
I'm not being funny.
Fine margins.
And everyone's blowing smoke up their asses. We have to put things in perspective.
They did do a wonderful job of rattling Arsenal.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Yeah, well, they do. They are they still moaning about that Mbeumo goal? That, you know, not moaning,
yeah,
about it, but the Ivan Toney goal.
It wasn't on their list. It wasn't on their list, so they didn't talk about that goal,
but they talk about the Ivan Toney goal all the time, don't they? Mm. You know, but anyway, but listen, we're not talking about Arsenal because we'll be talking about them in a couple of weeks' time after the international break when we play them as well, because we've got to come back to this week as well, because like I said, we're going up to Liverpool in a little bit. But just coming back, just final thoughts as well on the league itself. Like, you know, this is very, very early days, and we're not saying you should predict or anything like that, but any teams there that, you know, either scares you, do you think that we're kind of out of our depth? Because there's at one stage, because, you know, there's one season where we thought, oh my god, we're playing Man City, blah blah blah, back end of the season, we need to get points on board. Then last season we were like, oh,
last season.
That's really, really easy. That this season now, looking at where we're doing and other teams and what they're doing out there, anyone kind of scare you a little bit? You think, actually, to be honest with you, we're still a little bit, not out of our depth here, but they're still one or two, three, four notches above us. Ali.
I think there's two, or I think it says several teams who on their day are several notches above us, but I don't think we fear anybody.
Who?
City on their day are above everybody. City play at their peak. I think, you know, I think anybody struggles to live with them, to be honest. I think Liverpool.
But City, don't you think they're a little bit kind of inconsistent at the moment now?
I'm just saying at their peak. If they play at their peak, I think everybody struggles to live with them. Any team will struggle to live with them. You have to, you know, when you play Man City, you've got to play at your best and hope that they have to be a little way off their best. Let's be honest. When we beat United, we were brilliant, but they were a little bit off their best. And it's just sort of like, I don't think we fear anybody, but you just have, well, there's a couple of teams that you have to have things go a little bit in your favour. You have to have a couple of their players maybe not perform. So if you're playing Liverpool, you maybe want Salah to have a little bit of an off day. But I don't think we fear anybody. I think on our day we can beat anybody. But, you know, it's like everything. You know, everything in life, a little bit of luck comes into everything, doesn't it? I mean,
Sherlock.
If we hadn't have beaten them all in previous seasons, I would have gone the obvious answer of like the big six. But had we taken a scalp against all of them, so I don't necessarily fear the teams, but I would say individual players. I think if you like, is it Doka at City? Haven't seen him in the flesh yet, and the way that he went about Bournemouth, sort of, if we're not on our best, it could be quite worrying. I think we need to take, I'm not going to say teams like, because I never want to be the guy who says teams like, but we need to take the rest of the league as seriously as we take the so-called big clubs, because, you know, we switched off against Bournemouth, didn't show up against Everton, and I think the sort of the concentration to be on it and at it every single game is what worries me, is if that goes, you know, if that isn't there on the day, because it'll get punished.
Yeah, and I mean, and Laney, just quickly, just coming back to. You know, 9 month season, as you say. Okay, at the moment it's 11 game season for us at the moment now. Where's your heart and your head at?
You know, clearly, yes. Clearly, City are in a league of their own. If they're firing all cylinders, so we'll take that as a given. The rest of them, apart from in the three seasons we've been in this division, I think we've only failed to beat Crystal Palace and Newcastle. I think we've beaten every other team in this division who have been in. So we haven't beaten Luton in the top flight yet, and we haven't beaten Sheffield United in the top flight yet, because they haven't been in the same division as us. But we've beaten them in the teams below, in the divisions below. So no one really scares me anymore. But I am aware that, you know, Aston Villa, they're another team that when they're firing on all cylinders, they can dismantle you like they did at their place last year. Arsenal, you've obviously got to be very wary, but I think we got the old knowledge on how to play Raya. We need to press them as hard as we possibly can and don't let their forwards spin and run into space.
Raya can't play against us though, can he?
Oh no, can he not? I think he could have done in the Caribou Cup game.
He can't in the league though, can he? Because he's on loan. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. So well, I'll take that back then, obviously. But no one really scares me. But I just, you know, it's a bit of a cliche that anyone can beat you on any given Saturday because there is that much quality in this division. But I still back ourselves now that we're a little bit more organised and we've got a few more players coming back and we can bring the likes of me on for the last sort of 10 minutes and, you know, he shore things up. And, you know, what a cameo that was. I know we're going to talk about the West Ham game in a minute, but, you know, we've got so many players that can contribute so much and him coming on just underpins kind of a few of the frailties elsewhere. We're still light in a few areas, but going back to the question, no one really scares me. I think it's a fairly average league this year, bar probably five.
Yeah, so for me, I'll just say briefly as well, it's interesting, we played Tottenham first game of the season. We were really disappointed we didn't get all 3 points from that. And then looking back on it, it actually looks like quite a good result in retrospect, even though we probably should have got all 3 points for there as well. But what I'm saying is that I actually think that, you know, Man City to me still aren't like the team that they were maybe two or three seasons ago, where you were just like, listen, it's a done deal. It's an absolute done deal with them. And I think, you know, teams are taking points off teams that they shouldn't be taking points off, including us. We're taking points of teams that we shouldn't be taking points off. If you listen to Neil, we're going to talk later, he's talking about, you know, Brentford, you know, the teams fear playing Brentford because they're just like a really hard team to play against, you know. And there's other teams, even talked about Luton with a lot of respect, saying, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they play in a particular way, and if you don't, you know, if you've got your guard down, they'll take points off you. So I like that idea that, you know, at the end of the day, it's not a done deal with, you know, with the Man Cities and all these other teams as well. And I actually reckon there'll be a bit of an upset this year, and I think that Tottenham are looking all right. To be fair, they bought some decent players, and as much as I hate him, Maddison really annoys me, but he's doing the business for them. He's a good player, you know, stuff like that. And also Liverpool, we'll see how it goes, because if they get points off of us, get 4 points off of us, I think that may motor them. I'm hoping it doesn't happen, to be quite honest with you, just for our sake. But I think Liverpool could be in there as well. So I think it could be a little bit more of an open league. But anyway, we could discuss this probably more after 20 matches, actually, you know what I'm saying? Mm. So it'll be like sort of like the 73% or probably sort of 82%, probably like that, that the league table is going to stay exactly as it is. But tell you what we're going to do, though. I've got a glass of wine here. I know you lot got a glass of wine. There's a few fruity IPAs flying around. We're going to go have a little drink. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about West Ham. So there you go, West Ham, coming out of New Griffin Park. Fifth time we've played them. It's just actually the sixth, but we don't mention the sixth one because it doesn't count. We actually lost that one, but we don't tell anyone about that because it was in the cup, and the cup we don't do very well in at the moment now. So the cup we just put to the side. And so we played West Ham five times in the league, in the Premier League, and we have won every single time so far. So as we said, Thomas Frank, five. David Moyes, nil. And you can see Moyes, he was not happy at all. You see, he felt very uncomfortable being out-tucked by the Frank five times in a row. It was a game. The result was fabulous, but it didn't quite look like it was going to be going the way it should be at half-time in particular, did it, Ali?
No, we started off so well, didn't we? Neil getting his goal, which was fantastic. Sort of like, because, you know, oh, his little face, he was so happy, and everybody was so happy, and it was a great moment for him, even if Frank's original shot was absolutely shocking. But it was a great moment. But really good. And then we just, I don't know, it was a combination of them being very good for 10 minutes and us switching off for 10 minutes, and they scored two goals, and in fair play to Kudus, that was a great goal, although I think he had a bit too much space to do it. And it just felt like, I don't know, I went and got to half-time, are we going to come back from this? And maybe we can get a draw. But, you know, the boys came out and they came out really firing in the second half. And we rode our luck a little bit, you know. West Ham could have gone 3-1 up. Antonio did a fantastic piece of defending for us, taking the ball off Saeed when he just had a tap in. But yeah, I thought we were brilliant second half, and I think we fully deserved to come back and win that game. And there were some really good performances all over the pitch. I think Norgaard was back to his, well, for me, I think other people disagree, but for me, he had back to his very best. I mean, it's got to the point with Jensen now where, you know, he's so good you almost don't notice he's so good anymore because you're so used to it. And I thought Brian was fantastic again. And Nathan Collins is starting to look like the player that we all knew that we bought. So, and I have to say, big up to Strahovska for coming in at half time. It's really difficult for a goalie to come into a game, you know, halfway through a game or at any point in a game. And what a performance in the second half by him with the ball at his feet. I thought it was fantastic. So, brilliant. It was great. I thought it was, you know, fantastic second half performance. Good first half performance, bar 10 minutes where, you know, we just let them get on top of us a bit. And, yeah, really, really happy with the way it went.
Very, very happy. Tell you something, you're happy. We're going to go to the fans in the stands and in the pub after the game because they were very, very happy. Let's hear what they had to say straight after the match.
Oh, fantastic. What a good game. It was a really good Premiership match. It went one up. They equalised, they went ahead, we went ahead, we won it, and West Ham will be very, very sore tonight. They will be very disappointed, but we had a really good game. Collins at the back was monumental. He just led the line all the way through. Changing keeper at half-time as well, disrupting everything, but we hung in there. We won.
We came back and edged a very tight game, but you've got to say, when it comes to commitment and overall quality, we just had the edge. The Collins, amazing. Yanel, amazing. Norgaard, standard, amazing. But every one of those players played brilliantly today. Worked their way through a difficult period when we were under the cosh for a little bit. But yeah, great result. Come on, you beast.
The way we came back was fantastic. It was a really exciting game of football. I mean, both teams really added to it. You know, both going for it. I just really enjoyed that game. I've got to say, Nathan Collins was absolutely superb. You can see why we spent 20-odd million on him. He was fantastic.
I have to say, my favourite moment that I'm going to look forward to was Jensen's filthy nutmeg in the bottom right-hand corner. Oh, disgusting. And then his ball in for Collins.
Oh, unbelievable. My God. It's incredible, isn't it?
Collins, absolutely unbelievable header. Great to see me on the ball. Great to see him back. I mean, every time he got it, superb. What a cracking day. I did fear the worst. I thought Lady Luck was going to shine the other way, but as it turned out, we came out on top. Up the bees.
I
thought it was really good. Really, really good. I thought a decent West Ham team. I thought we played all right. I thought we were unlucky to be down at half-time. Good finish for them for the second goal, for sure. But I thought we were good throughout today. Some really, really good performances. Fair play to the unsung. I thought Onyeka had a decent, solid 90 today. Collins looked good again. But Matty Jensen, superb, eh? Superb. 75 minutes, controlled that game. Good finishing. Not quite sure how the old Gillam gave the second goal to Yanel when it was clearly an own goal from the challenge from Collins, but that's a good result, eh? Three wins in a row, bring it on.
Not being funny, they had 10 minutes in the game and they scored 2 goals. You know, if you look at the whole game, those are the 10 minutes they had. They got 2 goals, yeah, Kudos' goal, absolute screamer, brilliant, you know, no one was getting that out of the net, not even Raya.
Who?
Don't be like that.
All credit to all of the teams and real credit to Troska as well, who came on for the second half after Flecken got injured in the first. He was really confident and played some beautiful balls out as a goalkeeper. Really looked confident, and I'm pleased for him as well. We're a team going places and on the up, so I'm really looking forward to being at Anfield next weekend. I reckon we could give Liverpool a scare.
There you go, fans in the stands, in the pub, having a laugh, talking about West Ham and how we seem to have this. It's did something right. Look, I'm going to be. It's, you don't have to talk about this now, but it's going to have to come to an end at some stage. There's going to be a draw. There's going to be a loss at some stage. So we have to just lap up these moments when they do happen, because, you know, like I said to you, these things just don't go on forever. And if you think they do, then, and if you haven't actually sort of milked the moment when they happen, then when it doesn't happen anymore, then you're like, oh no, I didn't take the most of that. So let's just talk more about West Ham, Laney. West Ham was very good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you know, as Ali said, they had a decent 10 minutes and they scored two goals in that. The rest of the game, I thought we were kind of not necessarily in control of, but, you know, we looked good in the rest of the match. It wasn't massively dissimilar to the Burnley game. You know, they were better than Burnley. Burnley had a couple of good chances and should have scored one, if not two. Where West Ham, being that, as I said, that much better, they did. I just thought we got the tempo right. We got the attitude right. We weren't gonna let West Ham impose their game for it any more than they were capable of doing. Let's not take too much away from West Ham, because they are a decent team. They're just not performing consistently, and we were hoping that we got them at their inconsistent best rather than, you know, actually at their best. But it wasn't anything to do with their deficiencies. We were good, you know. We deserved the win overall, and it was just a cracking game of football, really, isn't it? You know, 1-0 up, 2-1 down, and to come back. And you know, I thought that Brian and Bumo should have scored one, if not two, especially in the first half. The one that whistled just past the post on the stroke of half time, you know, he had another cracking game. Loads of positives. A few negatives, one or two negatives, but that's the game of football, and it creates for a really entertaining game. And, you know, we'll probably remember that game way more than we will against, you know, Burnley, where most things went our way. You know, it was a game that we had to come back from adversity in, and you kind of, they're the ones that stick in the memory for longer.
Yeah, and if I remember rightly, we're standing there in the West End, we're 2-0, 2-1 up in the beginning of the second half, or sort of the second half was going on, we're 2-1 down, sorry, not 2-1 up. And I remember we turned around and we all went, it's actually a really good game. You know, so everyone's going, that's actually a good game, isn't it? It's like, yeah, even though you're losing, you actually commented it was a good game. And to me, you know, listen, you want to win, but also, like, as a football fan, and I keep saying that, I'd love going through the exciting games, like, you know what I'm saying, but only if you can win at the end of it. Like, you know, like the Bournemouth game, when you've gone 2-0 down on aggregate, you're like, oh, no, we're going to go out of the playoffs, and then you end up winning. Those are the best wins, like, you know what I'm saying, the last-minute winners, all that kind of stuff. I hate to say it, but Man United fans must have loved their win against us, because they're like, you know, they were out for the count, and then all of a sudden they get two goals in the last minute. That's much better than having scoring two goals in the first minute. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, Bill, I said to you, didn't I? I stood next to you, and 2-1 down, I said to you, you take a draw, and you went, no.
Yeah.
And then at 2-2, I said, take a draw. And you went, no.
No.
So, and at 3-2 up, you take a draw.
Take a draw.
And you went, yeah. No, you didn't.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't. The reason I bring that up is I think we could all sense that it wasn't going to end 2-1 to them.
Yeah, definitely. And Sherlock, I'm just saying, you've got Sherlock Holmes in the house here as well. I mean, there's lots of very lovely, lovely moments during that game. Tell us something, just pick out one or two moments for you that made you purr.
I'll take Mbeumo and Jensen out on the wing, just passing the ball back between them a couple of times to try and find the perfect cross.
I think they did.
That might have been for Collins' header. I'll take Collins' first goal as well. I was wearing it. I got a Wolves mate who was delighted to see the back of Nathan Collins. I think him and Pinnock are starting to look really, really good together. And I was so happy with his goal and so happy with how he was for his goal. And I mean, if you're talking about purring, man, we've got to go back to Malpai. Like, I'll hold my hands up and say I was one of the people who thought it was a bit of a panic buy. I didn't really see what we were doing there. He looked so happy to be playing for Brentford, and he looked so happy to score. And his post-match interview was like Oscar worthy in terms of the emotion that was on show, except it wasn't acting, it was legit. Like, just so happy for him, man. So happy for him. It's good to see him smiling.
Definitely.
His little face at the end, when we were doing, he was absolutely radiating joy. It was like, I thought, oh, bless him. I just wanted to take him home and mother him. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, he was so happy.
Never heard it called that before.
Oh no, I saved that for somebody else, as you know.
and talking about the Collins and Jensen thing, it's that Jensen's cross to Collins as well was absolutely sublime as well. I mean, that cross was amazing to Collins as well. I mean, Lainey, any moments for you?
Well, yeah, I'm gonna jump on the Strakosa bandwagon. Actually, I'm gonna say that a couple of his pass. I mean, obviously there's the goals and the crosses and the trickery, but I'm actually gonna go. A couple of times I looked at you and I looked at Carey behind and I went, this is the goalkeeper we've been waiting for, and he was already here, but he wasn't in the right frame of mind, that he wasn't confident enough. On this form, he was undroppable, and I think he will be dropped on Sunday. But I don't think we should necessarily drop him. I'm not wishing Flecken hasn't recovered. Obviously, I'm wishing he's recovered, but I'm not worried if he isn't, because I think Strakosa on that form, he looked the best passer of the ball and the most assured. Replacement for Raya that I could imagine. So a couple of those little balls over the sort of right winger to our left back that had bombed on a little bit. So yeah, I thought the little dinked passes, he looked really assured, and I was really, really sort of pleased to see him sort of kind of start to show the form that we hoped he was capable of.
Yeah, and Ali, any purrs for you?
Oh, there were loads, but I think it was just great at the end when Mee came on, promptly won two headers and put a block in all within a space of 30 seconds. It was classic Ben Mee. It's like Ben Mee broke the career in 30 seconds, and that was just, it was just great with the crowd right behind me going Mee.
It was
great to see. Fine. Great to see him back.
Yeah, we've missed, again, you talk about it, like, you know, we didn't have the dance scene for 6 months because, like, you know, one of our last wins before, you know, the win last week against Burnley was like last May. It's Man City, wasn't it?
Man City.
So it's like last May. And then from May to October, we hadn't actually won or danced. I mean, that was a bit of a close season, but we don't talk about that. But we hadn't danced for 6 months. So all that, but also the Ben Mee scenario, we hadn't got Ben Mee. And I think that the fans missed him so much when he came on. Everyone was potty for it, and then he came on and he made the blocks, that because we thought, look, if West Ham score, we're in all sorts of trouble here. You know what I'm saying? Boom, block, block. And the me, the volume of the me was tremendous, wasn't it? Like, you know what I'm saying? You know, just turn up the volume, which is great. Yeah. So that was good. My moment as well, which I thought was great, was just describing it is Ben Rama's miss. You know, it was the Antonio Ben Rama moment, which was because we sort of, but we didn't quite know what was going on. We were thinking, how did he miss that? But then when you saw it back, you're thinking, oh my God, how did that happen? Why did they do that? Like, you know, and it literally, it's hard to describe, but you know, the ball was coming in, literally Ben Rama was just about putting the back of the net. Then Antonio, who's obviously struggling because he's not where he was at the peak when Martin Allen, he had him on a podcast a few years ago, he goes, man, Antonio, the best striker in the world. He's going to play for England. He's going to play for Scotland. He's going to play for Brazil, he'll play for everybody at the same time. We're like, are you sure, Martin? You know, so, but now obviously he's dipped a little bit and he's desperate for a goal. So he was desperate to put the ball in the back of the net, and he actually basically completely fluffed it and basically took it off Ben Rama's toe and it went wide. So we were very happy, Antonio.
So he went nuts, didn't he? Absolutely nuts.
Yeah, he was furious. Absolutely. It was a wonderful angle on Match of the Day of him, just like absolutely livid.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, to be quite honest, you agent Antonio, because as you also know, that he should have played for Brentford, and I think he probably in the back of his head thinks, look, you know, I should have played for you, but maybe if I just do this now, you might actually take me back and I can play for you again. So, which is all good. But anyway, listen, I'm just going to give you the way that game flowed, you know what I'm saying, for that one, for Brentford. We were effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities from the flanks as well, and we were strong at finishing. Weaknesses, we didn't really actually have any weaknesses. As well as for West Ham, they were effective creating goal-scoring opportunities from the flanks, but they were aggressive and gave away a lot of free kicks around the box. We attacked down their right, and they played with width down the right side. They favoured favoured crossing the ball and favoured long shots as well. Ratings, Neil Maypay on whoscored.com got the highest with 7.9 as well. Then you got Mohamed as well with 7.7, Nathan Collins 7.6, Frank Onyeka 7.5, and Mikel Antonio, the goal robber, 7.3 as well. This is according to whoscored.com. So just giving you a little vibe as to kind of what was going on there on the pitch there as well. Just listen, any last thoughts on that West Ham game? I mean, you know, I'll tell you something as well. The atmosphere was good as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. It's just difficult sometimes when you're 2-1 behind, because sometimes it just the pressure of it gets a little, not toxic, but I just felt it echoed what I just said about you, Bill. And I think the fans could feel that something was going to happen, and even when we were behind, the game was way from over. I think there was a real belief on and off the pitch on Saturday, and that's what comes from a couple of wins. I think the Burnley game was critical. We win that, and then I think, you know, that like pressure release allows the team to kind of like be a bit more confident and a bit more expressive, and again the fans get just a little bit more comfortable when things don't go their way. They don't get on the players' back. They actually think that they're capable of doing something over the 90.
Yeah.
I think two things that struck me. Was sort of like we were kicking towards the East End second half, and it's quite unusual for the West End to get so potty for it when we're kicking towards the East End second half. But I think the beer for 30p a pint might have had something to do with that.
We didn't get there early. I mean, I had a game in the morning, so I didn't get there literally till the kickoff again. But
you got to pre-order it, Bill.
Yeah, I heard a few people were quite potty for the beer at expense a pint.
Jonathan Birchall here again. Past performance is no indication of future returns. It seems that that's not a phrase that applies to Brentford when playing Chelsea at Stamford Bridge in the Premier League, nor when we play West Ham, home or away, as it was another true-to-form result, ending in another 3 points on Saturday. And maybe it wasn't looking so certain at half-time, as it was the first time this season in the league that we got into the break losing. In his time in charge, Thomas has had to give 6 previous team talks at 2-1 down at the break, with 3 ending in wins and 3 defeats. The last one in a home game was when Blackburn visited Griffin Park in 2019, and we turned that around to win 5-2 against a side with David Raya in goal. Neil Maupay scored his first goal in his second spell, in front of the West Stand. His last in his first time with us was in a 3-0 win over Preston, also in 2019, in front of the Ealing Road fans, 1,644 days ago. For the first time this season, we added an own goal to our score sheet. We've had a couple of these in each of our Premier League seasons so far, although we have a few more to go to beat the 7 our opponents scored for us in the 1954-55 season, when own goals were our 4th highest scorer of the season. We saw Thomas Tatoyska replace the injured Mark Flecken at half-time. It was back in 2012 that we last had 2 keepers, having 45 minutes each, when Simon Moore left the bench to replace Richard Lee at half-time in a 4-0 win over Carlisle. But our first ever sub-goalkeeper was Gordon Phillips in 1970 in a game at Crewe, in an era when we could have just one sub. He wasn't there as starting goalkeeper Chick Brody had a niggling injury, nor that manager Frank Blundstone had a premonition that he would need a sub-keeper. Rather, that we were in the midst of an injury crisis, and Phillips was one of just only 12 fit players we had at the time. Although two keepers may have helped to keep the score down, as we lost the game 5-3, Gordon remained as an unused sub.
And just coming back to talking about the West End, I'll just give you a few little JB facts and figures and stats on that one as well. 80% of the league games at the G-Tech, as we call it, we attack the West End in the second half. So basically 80% we attack towards our end in the second half. But this season, it's only been 50%. So 50-50. And we've actually won 49% of the games the usual way round, so attacking towards the West End, and just 35% the wrong way Okay, so he scored a total of 65 goals in the West End with 41 at the East End, and conceding goals are pretty even with about 35-36 as well. So that just gives you an idea, like I said to you, how this season we've seemed to have got over our sort of kind of, what I say, non-kicking towards the way that we like to hoodoo. It still does feel a bit funny there, doesn't it, Laney?
Yeah. I love beating them though. I look to the games at the Taxpayers Stadium, and just the fact when they've been goading us and giving it large, and then we've beaten them twice, and just seeing them slink out, and I love beating West Ham. I love beating all the London clubs.
Yeah, but didn't you feel nervous when we were kicking the wrong? I mean, because I don't know. I only realised
not,
like,
really,
20 minutes
no,
in.
Not really. No, not really. No.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I'm quite superstitious, but it doesn't bother me that much, no.
I think we just have to agree that Norgaard is rubbish at winning the toss, isn't he? You know, it only happens if Norgaard's been regularly captaining the team. If it's Tony, if it's Pontus, we seem to be all right. Norgaard comes along and he's lose the toss every other game.
It's Jensen's fault, though.
Jensen's fault, yeah.
That's
Jensen's
right. Well, Sadiq's Khan's fault, actually. But, you know, we won't go there. You know what I'm saying? You know? So that's a bit of an in-joke. But, you know, some people will get it and some people won't. But we shall move on immediately. Let's just blame somebody for everything, all the things of the world. But we shall move on. Let's look. Tell you something. We've had JB giving us some facts and funks. But also, we're going to go over to the US. We're going to go to the Gowler. The Bees Breakdown Posse. They're going to give us a bit of a lowdown, the statistical and the tactical lowdown on the West Ham game. And also they're going to look forward to the Manchester United game.
Liverpool.
Listen, he's going to look forward to the Manchester United game. And also he might talk about Liverpool as well.
They're both playing Red Bull. You're right.
Hey, this is Jacob Gallagher with Bees Breakdown. Here to do a quick West Ham review and then talk a little bit about the Liverpool match. So West Ham created 1.8 XG to Brentford's 1.6, but 0.96 of West Ham's XG was from hitting the post and then that tap in for their second goal. West Ham did allow Brentford to hold possession. The Bees ended with 58% possession, and West Ham created some chances from transitional moments, but really struggled to take advantage of them. Otherwise, Brentford did well, keeping West Ham in wide areas. Trakosha didn't even face a shot on target in the second half. I thought that their 4-4-2 led them to having trouble stopping Brentford's build-up. They tried to make some adjustments, but they never could really sort it out, which partly was from Brentford being able to build up in a variety of ways. I thought that Brentford did really well with their positioning to allow them to consistently win those second balls. In fact, Norgaard is second in the Premier League for loose ball recoveries with 84. I also thought that Jensen had an outstanding game with 7 shot creating actions, 4 passes into the penalty area, and he connected on 10 out of 13 long passes. All right, now for that Liverpool preview. So they're third in the Premier League table. They've created the most XG with 24.8, but part of that is due to having the most shots with 196. And they have one of the lowest shots on target percentage and longest average shot distance, which statistically Brentford is one of the best teams in the Premier League for forcing long shots and low XG chances. So you may see Liverpool end up with a high amount of XG, but it might be those low percentage shots. And Liverpool are a very pass-heavy team. They've recorded the most key passes and progressive passes in the league, and they average 58.5% possession, and they've only let in 10 goals, which is the fourth lowest in the Premier League. They also have the fourth lowest PPDA, which means that we really should expect that high press from them. They also lead the Premier League in loose ball recoveries, as Klopp loves to counter press, so the Bees will most likely resort to using those long balls in order to prevent them from winning back possession deep in Brentford's half. Liverpool also has the second highest aerial duel win percentage at 58.1%, which is another thing to watch as Brentford try to take advantage of set plays that has really given Liverpool trouble in the past.
So there you go, the Gowler. The Gowler. The Gowler in the house. Bees breakdown. Talking about Manchester United. No, he wasn't. He was talking about Liverpool there as well. He wanted to talk about Man United because Man United, you know, and Liverpool.
Yeah, you had to correct him, didn't you, Bill?
They had a thing going on. They've got a thing going on. But at the end of the day, listen, he's shifted off Man United. He's gone on to Liverpool. And we know exactly what's going down in Liverpool. But more importantly, West Ham. Go and check him out on beesotted.com. He's got his articles, the Bees Breakdown articles. They're brilliant. A tactical lowdown, statistical lowdown of basically the game on a blow-by-blow basis. Photographs, diagrams, pointy fingers, all sorts of malarkey going on there. Really, really good. And yes, the Gowler is in the house.
Hold on, Bill. Did you read the comment on Facebook? Apparently, that we might as well put all of those Bees Breakdowns together in a book and hand it out to the opposition coaches. But apparently, by doing that, we're giving away all the Brentford secrets.
Okay, we're giving away our secrets. So basically, all the other teams do not have anybody that watches our team at all. They just sort of sit down there and they all turn up on a Saturday.
No, they don't.
And they all read random Facebook pages.
That's right. They pick names out of the hat, yeah. And
apparently they got no stats of their own. They just look at that article. That's it. They haven't got a team of analysts and video replays. They haven't got any other information apart from the Gowler.
No, the Gowler. But they're saying that as well. Saying that as well. I mean, I noticed as well, and I didn't notice until it popped up on one of my feeds. Even the official club site's got their own Gowler. So I've seen they've done their own Bees breakdown with, they've got some statistical guy and he's done exactly the same thing.
No, that's out of order.
On the club website as well.
Well, you know what, they might as well put it all in together in a book and just hand it out to the they might as well just do that, mightn't they?
I'll tell you something, they might as well tell Thomas Frank to go down to the opposition and actually kind of like get his PowerPoint out and his whiteboard, yeah, and sit in front of the opposition team and tell him exactly what they need, actually, because he knows exactly what they need, doesn't he?
Yeah, and Brian Boomer, he's rubbish as well, isn't he?
That's right. Anyway, listen, we should move on from this sarcasm here, because it's not, sarcasm is not funny, okay,
no,
Lainey?
Lowest form of wit.
Yeah, it's the lowest form of, yes.
I mean,
yes.
It is funny. Yeah.
So listen, we have finished talking about Manchester United, okay, and we're thinking about talking about Liverpool at some stage. We played West Ham before, we played Burnley, and we had Miss Middlesbrough that we talked about a few weeks beforehand. Right, it's all getting very wine-shaped here in the virtual joint. We're going to go away, have a glass of water, because I think that will probably clear things up for everyone. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about the Liverpool game. Liverpool. I love going to Liverpool. I love Liverpool fans. I love just laughs going up to Liverpool and playing Liverpool, because pretty much every game that we played against Liverpool, there's been something happened. I mean, up there we haven't done so well, but down at New Griffin Park, oh my God, the two games that were down there, oh, they're just absolutely fantastic. One of them, the 3-3 game, oh, that was great. And then beating them was on a next level last season. But we're going up there. We've got the first taster up there, up in Liverpool. And so we're going to have to go up there and we're going to have to hold our ground against Liverpool, who are doing pretty well this season, doing much better this season at this stage than they were doing last season, when they were a little bit all over the place, to be quite honest with you. So it's not going to be nearly as easy at this stage, but at the end of the day, as we know, anything can happen. I'm looking forward to going up to Liverpool. I'm on a there and back at this time. I'm not staying overnight like I normally do. I cancelled the 75 hotels that I normally book up in Liverpool, because no one wanted to take any of them off me. But just to let you know, if you go to any away games, I always book about 75 hotels, so I've always got hotels free. So contact us if you need a hotel at any stage. But we're going up on a day or back, and I'm very, very much looking forward to it. Looking forward to looking up with the Anfield rap crew, who we will be chatting to in a little bit. And I'm looking forward to hopefully at least taking a point off of Liverpool. Ali, how about you?
I'm looking forward to the trip. travelling more in hope than expectation, I have to say. But, you know, that has happened before, and the hope has triumphed over the expectation. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be, you know, Liverpool's a great city. It's a great city to go out in, and it's always a good trip. I think it'll be tough this time. I think it'll be tough. You know, I think without a recognised left-back against Salah, who's been in really good form, I think that's going to be hard. I think we'll probably go to three at the back. I think me may come in there. Right back, possibly Rose left at left back, who knows. And I think we'll try and catch them on the break. But I think it's a tough ask away for Liverpool, you know, with a full strength side and with some key players missing. I think it's become that bit tougher. But, you know, this team continues to surprise us. So I wouldn't write them off getting some sort of result there.
No. I mean, listen, Liverpool, we've had some laughs up there. I mean, last year we experienced Eurovision. You know, we went to Liverpool, and there's all sorts of other stuff that was going on in and around us in the world, but you had no idea it was going on, because it's almost like Liverpool is in a world in its own, and it got taken over by Eurovision. To be quite honest with you, I mean, I thought it would be pretty cheesy, pretty crap, but it was actually quite a bit of a laugh, and literally, like, everybody then there was just in a really good mood. You know, even if you weren't sort of embracing Eurovision as such, they kind of just liked the idea that the city was just enjoying itself and having a laugh, and it was good, wasn't it?
It's coronation as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There's, like I said, there's all sorts going on that you had no idea that was going on in Liverpool itself, because it was just basically just doing its own thing.
Yeah, no, it would. It's a bit groundhog for me. I think it seems 5 seconds ago, but obviously it wasn't. It was at the beginning of the summer or the end, you know, mid spring or whatever. We had a good sort of day after, didn't we? Did a lot of walking and a lot of drinking, and it was a really, really good afternoon. I do enjoy going up to Merseyside. It's, you know, the steeped in football tradition and history, and going to Anfield is always a little bit special. We do owe them one there. I'm not sure it's going to happen this weekend, though, as Ali said, you know, having Hickey out and Rico out, and, you know, we're plugging gaps in both fullback positions, really. And you need to be at your best up there. I'm not dreading going up there thinking, my God, you know, we could really get turned over. Well, of course we could. I think we'd do all right, but I think they're going to be a bit too strong for us.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit. I'm going to come to you, the Sherlock, afterwards. We talked to Neil from the Anfield Rep, because I had a little chat with him a little bit earlier today. And he's very happy at the time, in fact, but he's probably not as happy now, because obviously I made a little joke on the Anfield Rep podcast, and I talked about it's no time to lose, and, you know, playing words on to lose. And fortunately, I think they've lost to Toulouse now, so I'm thinking, oh no, it's probably not the best time to drop that joke. But saying that, they're third in the league at the moment now, and they're playing Brentford, and they know that they need to get a result against us. So let's listen to happen. To have a little chat with Neil, have a little listen to the chat that I had with Neil a little bit early on today, talking about Brentford and Liverpool. So, a big game at the weekend, going up to Liverpool. It's on a Sunday. I don't think it's on the box. I think it's because Liverpool are European. Well, they're not quite European champions, but they're playing out in Europe as well. So they need an extra day's rest to get over their jet lag from coming from sort of France or wherever they're playing. I've got no idea where they're playing. But anyway, we got in the studio here Neil from the Anfield Rap. Neil, how you doing?
Very well indeed. It's Toulouse. We're in Toulouse.
All right. You better not Toulouse, mate.
Well, that's the thing. It's the jokes just write themselves when you play Toulouse. So you should always play to win.
That's right. I've heard Chelsea play Toulouse, actually, every time they play us, actually, at Stamford Bridge. But we won't go there, because this is the Brentford-Chelsea. Brentford-Liverpool podcast, okay. But anyway, listen, Neil, which is all good, like I said to you, but you're smiling away because you are... probably doing a little bit better than the last time, around about the same time last season, when things were going a little bit peculiar for you, weren't they?
Yeah, We're not doing a little bit better than I expected. I think that there's a bit of catching up that's going on from the people who, in a national sense, get paid to write and talk about football for big papers and big radio stations. Because I think there's always a rush with every club. It happens to Manchester United as well. It's just that where Manchester United are concerned, it's deserved to write off their chances when the opportunity comes. What we start the season with is, I feel like we've got the best goalkeeper in the league and we've got the best attack in the league. And if you've got both of those things, you've always got a chance. And you've always got a chance of playing well and going on a run. And that's what we've had. What we didn't have last season was, firstly, a lot of fitness. I think there was a lot of exertions from the season before that had done people in. We were around this time beginning to miss Jota and Diaz. Both of them were out for extended periods. But what we also had was a midfield that all of a sudden really looked its age. The season before, Liverpool had gone all the way in the league and the Champions League and had won the domestic cup double. But I think those exertions and also the adrenaline that those exertions actually gave the older players led to Liverpool running a couple of them one season too many and taking them a few games too far. And so last season, I think it's fair to say legs fell off. But I think the other thing that happened as well was hope disappeared. This is very, very, big club privileged, but the year before, Liverpool had tried to win every trophy that it was possible to win. And by the time Liverpool got to October last season, it was clear Liverpool probably weren't going to win a thing. And I think that really demoralised a lot of Liverpool's players. And in loads of ways, that's not acceptable. Your players should always be at 100%. But I think it's understandable from a human point of view. And I think that made legs that were already feeling heavy feel even heavier. I think it made every story feel like a hard luck story. And I think that Liverpool players were beginning to look for excuses. It was all a bit too hard. That changes when we get to about the March, April of last season. We go 2-0 down at home to Arsenal and we're dreadful. And it was at Anfield. And Anfield, the players and the Liverpool side just almost decided enough was enough, that we weren't going to stand for this anymore and everyone was going to get a lot better quickly. And by a lot better quickly, I mean in about 15 minutes. We turned that round to a 2-2. The whole place is a furnace. And since then, since literally that moment, we've only lost one league game. As odd as that might seem, given the fact that we don't finish in the top four at the end of that season, we've only lost one league game. And the performances are, broadly speaking, being in line with a side that can expect to get around 80, 85 points. Not quite nailed onto the 90 marker yet that we've been in the past, but something changed and something gave. And then the next thing that happens is another raft of transfers. Some of the older players have left. Who were toiling a little bit in the middle of the park. Some younger lads have come in and they've settled in relatively quickly. And the one thing there's been is no more excuses, and the manager's got no more excuses, and the manager doesn't want any excuses. Liverpool have been very, very, very focused in the start of the campaign. I think they've believed since pre-season that they're capable of a great deal. And so we sit here now 3 points off City. Obviously a tough game at the weekend coming against Brentford, but with genuine optimism that this is a season that Liverpool can lift some silverware, and I would argue, as I said before, can break 80 points, can maybe break 85 points, and if they can break 90 points, then they can have a genuine interest in this title by next May.
Yeah, interesting. So, I mean, just going back to last season quickly, so the marks out of 10 that you'd give last season, I'm just interested because obviously it didn't quite go to plan, but to me, it sounds like it was a bit more of a transition season for you.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit, but I don't think that everyone knew that. I think that Liverpool have been trying to do evolution, not revolution. And I think it gets to the end of last season and they need to actually do revolution. So they devolved the attack. Diaz had come in the January of 2022. Nunez comes in the July of 2022, and then in the December/January of 22 turn into 23, Gakpo comes in, and this is now a whole new attack with Jota and Salah. Jota relatively new signed in the summer of 2020, and obviously Salah being here since 17. Mane and Firmino now both left, Origi left, Minamino left. Those footballers have moved on, and Liverpool were doing something new and different. So I think that was a transition that was taking place and it was happening. But I think Liverpool had the idea they would do a bit of a staggered midfield thing over the course of this summer and then fade that and do that sort of stuff. But given ultimately that Jordan Henderson wanted to go and that Fabinho, the offer made by the Saudi Arabian club was given the age of the player and the performances he put in for the previous 12 months, and the fact that he looked shattered, frankly, I think Liverpool felt he couldn't leave that money on the table, so they did it. And from there then, that's led to that being a much more drastic process. So you'd give last season 5 out of 10 because, you know, let's be clear about this, Liverpool still come fifth. You know, they still play some good football. They beat Man United 7-0. Mm-hmm. You know, all the way through the season, it's like pockmarked. We beat Man City at home. You know, it's pockmarked with odd results this season where Liverpool play actually ever so well and there's a bit of a raging against the dying of the light. But there's only really consistent results in the last 10 league games of the season. Before that point, well, there were consistent results in January and February. They were consistently bad, but they were consistent. But by the end of the season, there's only consistently positive results April and May. So you give it sort of 4 or 5 out of 10. You wouldn't want to give it a 1 or a 2 because that's not getting any European football at all and being dreadful and awful to watch. That's when we were managed by Roy Hodgson. Mm. This was, but it still wasn't good. And it is now much better.
Yeah, so I mean, so obviously the start of the season, you're much happier. Third place, you are behind Spurs and behind Manchester City, of course, like I'm saying. And like I said to you, it's interesting because you said that you haven't lost in 10 home games, I think you said. Or 10 games, 10 league matches, was it, that you said that you haven't lost in. However, you almost lost recently at Luton Town. I mean, it was you were on the edge, yeah. Shouldn't you? I mean, just talk to me about that.
Yeah, we've only lost the one game we have lost is the one against Tottenham, which comes with its own set of circumstances and story. Luton, we don't play very well, but we create a ton of opportunities, you know, through the game. We're never that fluent, but they frustrate us, and they play, you know, they play well, and they've got their plan, and they execute it pretty well. But you know, we have repeated opportunities to go 1-0 up, and we don't take them, and you get punished. Last season, when we were poor, we were wilting. We weren't creating very much, and we go 1-0 down, and you felt it was never going to come back. It was different against Luton. You know, it was more one of them. They happen to every team every now and again, where it's not quite the keeper did get man of the match, but it's not quite the idea that the keeper's pulling off worldie after worldie. But you're just not putting the ball into the back of the net when the opportunities are presenting themselves. And then at some point, because a well-coached team, which is what I think Luton are, a well-drilled team, will find a way to punish it if you're not careful. But even then, we still managed to get the late equaliser to get it back to 1-1. And I've done this in seasons gone by where you're trying to win a title and draws feel like defeats. That one didn't because of the experience of last season where daft points, difficult games became almost embarrassing non-events. That didn't. You know, it felt like it's still a bit of a positive marker point, and obviously it's helped by virtue of the fact that Diaz scores the equaliser given everything that's going on in his personal life. So that also mitigated against the blow a little bit. Don't get me wrong, you know, an hour after full time I was furious and raging and felt as though they needed to be better, but as the time's passed, it feels like, and listen, the proof of the pudding's a lot of it's in this game on Sunday. You know, if Liverpool drop points again, then that draw against Luton will feel like more of a blow. But you know, last season Man City win the league and they drop points in 2 games against the sides that finish in the bottom 10 home and away. Only 2 games. Hmm. But they do drop points in 2. And you can't create a football world for yourself where you can't draw against a well-organised side on their ground who've got a really clear plan when you have a bit of an off day in front of goal. Like, if you decide that that's an unacceptable occurrence in football, then stop going to football, frankly, yeah. Because you're just giving yourself a path of misery. So yeah. Liverpool, I've got to be able to take the positives from that. There were positives to take from it, even though they don't play particularly well. There's learning to take from it as well. I think they put themselves through a really brutal 100-minute game at Bournemouth where maybe the manager picked a few too many of his big hitters in the League Cup through the wind and the rain because it was playing in a hurricane, literally in a hurricane at times. So maybe he needs to have a little think about that. They need to have a little think about that. But on the whole, the Luton thing is, all right, it's one of them, put it behind us, move on, and there's this massive game now on Sunday.
It's interesting because you've actually got a slightly different outlook on matches than you did probably when I spoke to you a couple of years ago. Because I remember when I spoke to you as well, and you were thinking, basically, you got your match, we have to win this match. If you dropped points against a team that you, inverted commas, weren't expected to drop points, it was all over. It was end of season, you know, you're not going to win the league, you know. It's interesting.
Still, they're still a part of that, but I think you've got to allow yourself one or two. What that Luton's result has done is given Liverpool less wiggle room. You know, last season Arsenal don't win the league and they drop points against five of the teams that finish in the bottom 10. City do win the league, they drop points against two of the teams that finish in the bottom 10. My point here is that you can't now drop points against, let's just say, more than three. So we've used one of our three. But the flip side of it is we are a third of the way into the season. This is game 12 coming up, you know. So from our point of view, it's going to happen every now and again, but it can only be every now and again. And so it's, you know, it puts more pressure on Sunday, and it puts more pressure on, you know, we come back after the international break, we play City, but then the next three games, Fulham, Sheffield United and Crystal Palace, two of those are away. And we need 9 points because all three of them will finish in the bottom half. Fulham will finish 15th or lower. They're not a good side at the minute, Fulham, I don't think. I think they've gone a year too long. You know, Palace, whilst difficult at Selhurst Park, are a tough side in a couple of ways, and they've got a few good players, but they're not a, you know, they shouldn't be seen as an impossible team to face. And Sheffield United, who, by the way, Manchester City go to Bramall Lane earlier this season, and it needs a Rodri 87th minute winner to make it 2-1. It will not be easy. It won't be a walk in the park. But what the result against Luton means is that, well, there's no hiding places in those three games. It's got to be 9 points if you want to be able to do what you want to do. You get a couple of these, but you can't start having six or seven of them, because if you do, you're not going to win anything.
Yeah, you spoke a little bit earlier as well. You're very excited about, you know, the evolution of your side, as you say, the players coming through. You've got the older players going out, new players coming through. Who's exciting you? Just give us one or two players that are actually exciting you.
So Barzalai's obviously really, really good, and he looks like, you know, he looks like he's been playing for Liverpool. He looks like he's got 200 games for Liverpool, not 20. He's full of poise, and sometimes you sign a player and they just look immediately like they belong. And that's Szoboszlai, and it doesn't just look like he belongs playing at Anfield. It looks like he belongs playing at the very highest level of club football straight away. You know, effectively almost from day one, he's looked like he just belongs. So he's remarkably exciting, and I think that there's still a lot more to come from McAllister. But he has shown in patches what he's about. Now, we haven't got him Sunday. He's suspended. He's got 5 yellow cards, which, by the way, we're going to see more and more of in the next sort of 3 or 4 weeks, because the referees have been unbelievably yellow card happy this season. So a number of players are going to start missing out here and there on a 5-card suspension. It's McAllister's turn. He's the first one for Liverpool so far this season. So he's not going to be available for this one against Brentford, and it is a bit of a shame.
Yeah. Just turning to the Brentford game, obviously, Bees, we chat, you know, probably once every 2 or 3 weeks. You know, I was on the Enfield, I'm going to be on the Enfield rep this week as well. I'm probably on the Enfield rep about once every 3 weeks, and I do very, very much enjoy it. But, you know, your knowledge of the Bees is very, very high. You watch football, you're a football person. Last season, obviously, we were very happy because we got a little bit of a win. Well, you know what I'm saying? We got a little bit of excitement down at New Griffin Park, as it was, which is great. A great game as well. Obviously, went back to Liverpool, and it didn't quite go according to plan up there as well, where you actually did assist. So it's almost like you could say it was even Stevens, if you want to sort of take it on aggregate. I think maybe we might have actually
comfortably
which is all good. But tell us something, just talk to me about Brentford quickly, and the things that the players that may kind of concern you, I say, considering we've got loads of injuries, by the way.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I think that you get to see with Brentford, for me, there's two things. I think Brentford have got a brilliant underlying structure in terms of how they play and what the manager expects and the understanding the players have got. It's really interesting because you talk about Brentford and we can really stop to talk about the sort of the new, you know, the use of data and the intelligence that guides Brentford from a sort of from the top down. But I think a lot of the virtues that Thomas Frank himself has, but also wants in his players, they're old-fashioned football virtues. Brentford's team, Brentford's squad, to me, with one or two exceptions, mostly amongst the younger players, I'd argue, is a set of footballers who, first and foremost, work very hard, and who are, secondly, really well-educated and really clever players. So there's this thing with Brentford that whenever I see them, which is that they always have, this really strong underlying structure and philosophy, for want of a better way, this sense of this is how we play. But then, B, the other thing that Brentford are able to do is they tweak cleverly game by game. It's not just as obvious as the big tweak of certain teams at home will play a back four against, certain teams away will play a back three against. It's more the idea of, right, we feel as though we can get at this side down their left flank. So we overload in that area, we tilt the team, we play asymmetrically. and we look to see if we can punish them there. The other team, this next opponent, they might be weaker down the left. This other side, you might be able to overload them in midfield. Let's do a little bit of that, whilst always staying true to the way in which Brentford quite consistently play. And I think that that's the thing you've got to watch out for. My point is that a lot of teams come, every team that comes to Anfield has an Anfield game plan. But a number of sides, certainly those that don't expect to finish in the top, say, sort of six or seven, and rate Manchester United there as you see fit. A lot of sides come to Anfield and they have the idea of how do we stop Liverpool predominantly and go from there. I think Brentford turn up with definitely some of that, but also how do we hurt them? And I think Brentford go everywhere with it. This is what we need to work on to ensure that we can stop them. But also, part of how we stop them is we have this way in which we are going to hurt them. And they're going to have to worry about this. And it's not an afterthought. It's not, well, we'll just hit some pace in wide channels. It's not, well, maybe we'll put a big man in and see what we can get. It's not even the idea of set pieces. While set pieces play a massive part in Brentford's game, there's, well, this is how we win our set pieces. And then this is what we do with them. We don't just wait until we get a set piece off a bit of luck because someone ran into someone. This is how we're going to do it. And I think that's the most impressive thing about Brentford. And you can obviously rightly put that down to the coach, but you've also got to say these are clever footballers. These footballers are not, you know, these are footballers who can be coached and coached well. And being able to be coached, I think, is worthy of praise. And it's always, we talk a lot about managers now when you talk about football, but it's always the 11 or 14 or 15 or 16 who end up on the pitch who have actually got to put this into practice. So you know when you play Brentford, you're going to get a challenge. And I think every team now knows that home and away, you're going to get a challenge. It'll be a different challenge away, but you're going to get a challenge. And that's what I'm expecting on Sunday. And then in amongst there, you know, I think that Jensen's looked really, really good this season. Whenever I've caught Brentford, I've been impressed with him. I think that I'm intrigued to see the direction of travel that Aya ends up on, because I feel as though he's just a teeny little bit inconsistent, but when he hits the heights, I think he looks like an absolute top quality central defender who can play really progressive football and reads the game well and can pass forward with, he punches it through the lines, which I think is pretty cool and pretty impressive. And then obviously, you know, when Bueno is an exciting footballer, I think he's one who, again, a lot of his movement sort of belies his years. I think he's got pace, and you can talk about the pace, but loads of players have got pace, and Bueno is really, really cunning with it. He knows, he works out where the weaknesses are, I think, and obviously he's coached in that, but he's doing that as well, I think, in real time on the pitch. You get to watch him, look at little areas, see if is there something there, will there be something there. He goes and goes, he backs himself and he backs his teammates. So I think those are the players who I'm intrigued need to see. That's not sort of missing anyone else, I'm talking them down. I think Pinnick is a really good player, but Pinnick's sort of Pinnick, you know, he's not going to become a different footballer overnight. He's not on a trajectory or anything like that. He's just going to keep doing what he does really, really well. Whereas I think those players are intriguing ones, and are ones that you've got to see develop playing Premier League football last couple of seasons.
Yeah, so listen, big game Saturday, you said, or Sunday, the nerves, because you're saying, look, the Luton has put the pressure on Liverpool in this game, right? So the pressure's there. So hopefully, and I'm not saying this disrespectfully, but your fans are going to be as quiet as they were last year, because the roar wasn't quite as loud. And maybe it's because it's Brentford coming, and it's not quite the same as Man United or as Manchester City.
Well, no, there's obviously an element to that, and there's always an element to that, and I think that's worth remembering. But last season, you know, that game was, we were beginning to sort of turn the league form around to an extent then. But you know, that was a pretty demoralised Liverpool. We were sitting sixth in the table. Again, supporters go through the same thing. You have expectations before a season starts, and then you realise they're not going to be met, and everyone's got to, at some point, realign what those expectations are with the new reality. I think it'll be interesting on Sunday, the atmosphere. I think it won't be, you know, it won't be a full roar in Anfield, to be clear, for 90 minutes.
Which is good for us.
It's good for you, but I think it will be one where, you know, if Anfield needs to get involved, it will. Whereas I think last season that was sort of not the case. I think this season Anfield can be, you know, Bournemouth was a really good example of it. We were, you know, Bournemouth supporters after 45 minutes would have said something quite similar. But Liverpool then go 2-1 up and go down to 10 men in a pretty contentious refereeing decision. And Anfield for 10 minutes was an absolute bear pit, and Liverpool make it 3-1. And then cruise home pretty much, and then the atmosphere quietens again. I think that's the thing about Anfield. It's not a continental crowd where it's 90 minutes of noise, or well, more accurate, 90 minutes of singing. But Anfield, when it needs to be there, is there. and certainly when Liverpool feel as though they're upwardly mobile, which we are this season. So almost in a sense, if Anfield's quiet, it may well be because it's a relatively placid Liverpool performance. If Anfield is needed, it will be there on Sunday big time for this one against Brentford. We've just got to sort of hope it's not needed in a really weird way. So it's this quite counterintuitive point, which is that I'd rather have a little bit less atmosphere and a comfortable 2-0 or 3-0 victory than a ton of atmosphere and the game is still very much alive with 10 to go and either team could win it.
Yeah, saying that, I'd rather it being that the latter if we win. If we win at the end of the day.
Exactly.
That's right. So I'm not going to ask you for a score prediction because at the end of the day, I know that you want Liverpool to win. So I could probably say 2-0 to Liverpool for you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But you're obviously thinking things are going to go the right way for you.
Yeah, I think it will. I think Liverpool will win by 2 clear goals. I think that that's just sort of where we are at the minute. But I don't expect it to be easy. I expect it to be quite attritional. I don't think it'll be a great game. You know, I really don't, because I think that these games at the end of these runs at this stage of the season, they often dry up a little bit. But I feel as though Liverpool at the minute at home, it's worth saying we've lost once in the last 12 months at Anfield. I think it's still within 12 months. It was against Leeds United who went on to be relegated. But if you go all the way back to the start of the 2017-18 season, in front of humans, this is in front of a crowd, Liverpool have only lost once, which is that game against Leeds United. So I understand if people think, well, he sounds very sure of himself. Brentford supporters thinking, we'll wipe that smile off his face and all that sort of stuff. I understand that, but literally, I've only watched Liverpool lose one league game since August 2017. So I think you can understand why I don't expect Liverpool to lose the game, because no one else has come and beaten Liverpool in the league, bar weirdly Leeds United, who go on to get relegated. So
5-5 draw coming in, yeah?
There we go. That could well be the one.
That's right. Okay, so look, this is Neil from the Anfield Rep. Cheers, Neil. Listen, I'm going to catch up with you Sunday. We'll have a quick pint before the game, maybe after the game as well.
Excellent stuff. Yes, come and see us after the game. We'll be doing some post-match. I might grab you.
Wicked. There you go, Neil from the Anfield Rep. I'll be checking him out on Saturday, Sunday. I'm not going up there on Saturday. I normally go up on Saturday. You know, we all go out to some sort of place and have a good laugh. But today, we're going straight in and out, up and down as it is. Trains are all over the place. So we'll just have to go for the little adventure as well. Go into a pub near the station as well. I think there's a new pub. Is it the Vine or something like that? Which sounds like it should be quite a laugh as well. So we may be popping in there, having a few Swifties before making our way down to Anfield as well. So looking forward to that. I mean, Sherlock, you as nervous as anybody else for this game?
Not sure nervous is the right word that I'd use. Resigned might be the word. I don't know. Like, it's, I think you might have jinxed it a little bit with a Toulouse joke, Bill, maybe, perhaps. I'm not sure. But I said it earlier about being completely on top of your game. And if, even with the injuries and the absences that we've got, if everyone is laser focused and completely on it, we might be able to get out of there with a draw. But I feel like we might kind of go down to a bit of a 2-1, perhaps, that sort of thing. Bit too early for a prediction, sorry, but I feel like they there's just too much about Liverpool, and there'll be a little lapse of concentration somewhere in the middle of the park or something, and that's all they'll need, and it'll be thanks, see ya. But I mean, it's no shame to kind of lose a tight game to a team like Liverpool, is it? I mean, if we get, you know, if it's an abject humbling, like if there's any kind of Sheffield United Newcastle scenario, then we'll be all up, sort of upset, but I don't think it'll be that.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm going to say, and again, Billy the Bee, always glass half full. Let me just mention the word, one bird, which is, you know, about 30 miles outside of London, Luton. You know, Liverpool went to Luton a couple of days ago, and I wouldn't say that they struggled, but they were on the verge of losing that game. You know what I'm saying? And you always get a game where, you know, you probably expected to win or expect to get points from, or a point from, and you don't get those points. And Luton was one for Liverpool where, you know, at the end of the day, they were celebrating like they won the FA Cup, like, you know what I'm saying, getting a point down at Luton, which is great because they got one point away from home, which is what you need to do if you're actually going to progress in this league. But then, you know, you come into play against us, they're thinking, oh my God, we just played Luton, we've got to just now play Brentford, who, to be quite honest with you, are, you know, we are who we are. We don't give up. We, you know, we don't take things lightly. We take these teams on. We normally go for 90 minutes. Okay, we haven't done great at Anfield, but, you know, still. And so I hear what you're saying, the Sherlock. However, you know, they also don't necessarily want to be playing us on Sunday, do they?
I mean, anything can happen, right? Like, you know, it's a cliche, but it's true. Anything can happen, and records are there to be broken. Luton is inspiring. Yeah, there is. It's the way that Luton went at them, and they celebrated. Was it 95th, 96th minute equaliser, something like that? We can go for that sort. Yeah, brilliant, great. I would love it. Like, I'm not sitting here waiting to be proved right. I really hope I'm wrong.
Listen, let's take a reality pill here. Just look at what they're good at and maybe not quite as good at as they should be. So very strong at counter-attacks, very strong at attacking set pieces, very strong at coming back from losing positions, strong at creating scoring chances, strong at creating chances through through balls and scoring chances. They're strong at protecting the lead. They're strong in the air. Okay, where they're weak is avoiding individual errors and also stopping opponents from creating chances. They like to take long shots, they short passes, they attempt through balls often, they control the game in our half, they attack through the middle, and they like possession football. So that is what we have to deal with. It's going to be a tough game. We can see that 100%, isn't it, lady?
Yes, it is going to be tough. It's going to be one of the toughest games we're going to face all season. The performance at Chelsea away shows that we're not fazed by not having possession. We're quite happy to hand the opposition the ball and let them attack us constantly. And we absorb it and we keep our shape. We need a lot of things to go our way. We need to take our chances. I think we're capable of getting a point if a lot of things go our way. I'm probably going to predict that we lose, but I just don't, on current form and what I've seen over the last few weeks, you kind of write us off at your peril, because, yeah, if it all goes their way, then they win. But we only need a couple of things not to go their way, and we're in with a shout. So, you know, we only lost narrowly there last season. You know, and that's what Ali said. You know, it's almost like they'll get one break, one lapse of concentration, one 50-50. They get a lucky ricochet, and then they're through, and they get the goal that matters. You stop them doing that. We're in with a shout of getting at least a point.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So, listen, I'm looking forward to going up there. Like I said, you're up on the train. I'm looking forward to seeing Anthony, Liverpool fan, Jermaine, Liverpool fan as well, Charlie, Liverpool fan there as well, is going up there and, you know, checking out them characters as well. Obviously, the Bees fans were there in full effect, sold out our location yet again. We actually probably got it right, as opposed to Nottingham Forest. We sold it out. We're going, oh no, actually we found some tickets underneath the couch. Oh no, we've really fluffed it. But we actually sold out Liverpool Tuesday. It's Tuesday, Sunday, 2 o'clock kickoff, which is good. So hopefully we'll be able to sort of raise the atmosphere a little bit, because, you know, as we know, Sunday kickoffs can be a little bit strange on the atmosphere front. But hopefully, like I said to you, if we're going up there early on the train, we have a few little beers, we just get the vibe going, as they say. So look, just going around the table, I want to ask you for a score prediction. I'm going to start with Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, I spoiled it already, didn't I? It slipped out. I'll go with a 2-1 Liverpool, but a tight 2-1. Like, yeah, we'll take it right to the wire.
Born slippy there with Sherlock Holmes. We've got Ali Mullally in the house.
I concur, I'm afraid. I'm going 2-1 Liverpool as well.
2-1 to Ali Mullally in the place. We've got Laney in the gaff.
1-1 for me, Mr. Grant.
But 1-1, the lady. Mm. And I'm going to go 1-0 to the mighty, mighty Bees.
Let's hope you're right, Bill, and we're wrong.
I'm going for it. I'm going to go for it. Listen, I'm going left field, as they go. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, longer, longer, longer. Anyway, we won't talk about that. So listen, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. For anybody going up to Liverpool, we'll see you up there bright and early in Liverpool Town Centre. I think we're going to drink it before the game. We normally drink beside the ground, but this time we're going to drink in the town centre. Like we said to you, where we're going before, is it the Vines or something like that? I don't know where the place is.
Can I pull you up on something?
Yes.
That was Underworld. Left Field was another band.
No, also, I was talking about what you. I seen you were drinking. I was talking about what you were drinking there, mate. You know what I'm saying?
I'm drinking wine. I'm drinking red wine.
Oh, that's right. UB40. There you go. Anybody else wanted to pull out some sort of drinking songs there? Anyone else?
You don't get off the train in Manchester, Bill, on the way up, will you?
No, I will do, actually. I'm going for a little tour before we get to the match. Okay. So anyway, listen. This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. I'm Billy Grant. I'm sitting here in the virtual joint with a glass of wine as well. That's good. And don't forget to buy us a beer, besotted.com/beer. Don't forget to also subscribe to us and on all good podcast channels, and also write us a lovely, lovely, lovely review. And it goes up in the charts, apparently, and it gets all over the place, which is all good. Like I said to you, I'm Billy in the house, and I've got Lainey.
Good afternoon.
We've got Sherlock Holmes.
Up the bees.
We've got Ali Mullally.
Looking forward to being able to see the whole pitch on Sunday.
That's right. And we also listen, there's me, Billy Grant, in the house here. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to going to Liverpool and see my Liverpool chums up there. We've got the Anfield Wrap. Don't forget to check out the Anfield Wrap this week. I'm on the Anfield Wrap as well. Check it out, and I'll have a little chat with them as well as we go on. What did we say? Oh, come on. Yubi. Yubi.
Yeah,
ferry across the Mersey, eh? We'll see about that.
No interest.
You be.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.